Welcome to First 30, your guide to starting your job right. Brought to you by Career Protocol. Go to careerprotocol.com to download our latest, greatest free career content. There's always something new, so come by and say hi.
And Forte Foundation. The Forte Foundation is a nonprofit consortium of leading companies and top business schools working together to launch women into fulfilling, significant careers through access to business education, opportunity, and a community of successful women.
Hi, I'm Angela Guido.
And I'm Beth Connolly, and we're here to talk about starting your job right. As you may know, the first 30 days can make or break your success in a company, so we're talking you through our top tips for early success. This stuff is also really useful if you're doing a summer internship, because you don't have a lot of time to impress your coworkers, so they'll invite you back full time.
And it's a contest, because contests are fun. If you like my tip best, you can vote for me at careerprotocol.com/vote.
But don't vote for Angela, because if I win, then she has to buy me dinner.
And if I win, Beth has to buy me dinner.
Well, tally up the votes each week, and whoever wins 2 out of 3 weeks gets a free, delicious dinner. And since we're here in Florence, Italy, you know it's going to be good. We'll be sure to share pictures on our Instagram.
And we'll tell you how to vote at the end, hopefully for me.
No, for me. Now it's time for episode 2, collaboration. So in your first 30 days on the job, you're going to be collaborating with your new coworkers. How are you going to share your ideas with confidence without trying to sell yourself to people and come off as arrogant or maybe even a douche? You want to, of course, make a good impression, develop strong relationships with your coworkers, and come in appearing to be really prepared and have great ideas. But you also want to fit into the company's culture, the way that they work together, and not stick out in a bad way. Stick out in a good way.
Stick out in a good way.
So we're going to be talking about that today. And Angela, do you have a little bit about yourself that you want to share as it relates to collaboration?
So much to say, Beth. So much to say after after everything that you just said. So if I think about my history with new jobs, I, like you, have had more than a baker's dozen of new jobs. And I've worked in a range of companies from like huge multinational firms like KPMG and the Boston Consulting Group to startups that I even started myself, entrepreneurial endeavors that I embarked upon alone or with a small team or with friends. Career Protocol is a very small company still. And so what I want to say two things about collaboration as it relates to your question. I think the first thing is collaboration is awesome. It's just so awesome. It's really part of what makes work fun. I've worked in so many different environments, and I have a preference for introversion. I actually consider myself an introvert. So I do some of my most creative and best work when I'm alone. In the last episode, I talked about locking myself in my office to work on the spreadsheet. And that is kind of my mentality. I'm a little bit of like a mad scientist who wants to go close myself away and think about stuff. But that's only one facet of work life. The other facet is sharing successes and adding to a shared solution. And it's so much more fun when you're working with people and adding something that's to an outcome that's bigger than you. And I really have learned that lesson especially through my entrepreneurial endeavors, where I've been working alone and then I was working with someone, like for example with you, Beth. And life is just so much more fun now. It's just so much more fun that we can like, you know, work together. So that's the first thing I want to say about collaboration. And the second thing I want to say is that my pitfall in my earlier jobs has always been not contributing enough early on, not contributing enough. So I like to be respectful of political cultures. I'm always paying attention to, you know, how do people feel? How do they think? What do they view their role? How do they view their role in this situation? And I'm always very nervous about stepping on toes and kind of overreaching. But I'm also, you know, nervous about looking stupid. Right. So I have all the different pressures that kind of cause me to not speak up or try to stand out much in the beginning. Yeah. And I've always regretted that. Every time I leave a meeting, not having said something that I was thinking, I beat myself up about it for at least a half an hour. So my tip for today, my number one tip for collaborating effectively in a new environment is to identify your spike. That's my little soundbite. Identify your spike. You can think of a spike as a place on the chart where your skill set bursts and goes up high. So if I mapped all of your skills on an X and Y axis, and I'm going to draw a line between all the dots of all your skills, you know, things like communications, you know, working with Excel, working with social media, whatever all the skills are for your job, the spike is the one place where the dot goes up to the very top of the chart. So it's where you have the most differentiated abilities, differentiated vis-a-vis your own skills. So it's the thing that really, among everything you do, you're best at, but it's also the thing that you're going to own with respect to your team and your coworkers. So it's the thing that you're going to be the best at on the team. And I don't mean best in a competitive sense, like you're trying to be better than other people, but it's the one thing that you want people to count on you for. So if we have, if you're, let's say your spike is working with Excel, that's certainly never been my spike, but let's say that's your spike. So your spike is working with Excel. You want to be the person that people think of when they have a tricky model to build and they have a question, or I'm staffing a new project and I need someone's expertise in building models. I want you to be the first person that I think of like this. So think about, and you can do this before you start the job, but you'll learn a lot in the first week, in the first 5 days, first 7 days, about what's needed, what's expected in the role, what's, you know, what other people are doing and what other people are not doing. The more you can learn about how the team is functioning, the easier it will be for you to identify the place where you want to differentiate yourself. And so identify that spike and then do everything you can to build it out as a core strength. So you can do everything from conducting more research in that area, taking online classes in that area, blogging about it, talking to everyone in the firm and getting their advice about how to be better at that thing. So it's two-sided. You want to work both to develop it, to develop that spike, and then also to let people know that that's an area that you are strong in and trying to get better in. So I'll give you an example from my career. Early on, before my MBA, I was working at KPMG in South Korea, in Seoul. And I was, you know, I was only 2 years into a career, well, really only 1 year into a career in business. Before that, I had been teaching English. So I didn't have a really strong foundation in the workings of the company. But my experience teaching had taught me how to manage a group of unruly people because my first job was teaching preschool. I taught a bunch of three-year-olds and I had to like herd cats all the time. So I had learned from that job how to keep the attention and manage a room full of people. So at some point, my boss asked me if I wanted to be involved in crafting the strategic action plan for the whole company of like 800 people for the next 5 years. And remember before I said, say yes. So even though I had no idea how to do that, I said yes. And I quickly found that the place I was able to add value to this group of like group CEOs and managing directors, I mean, these were the most senior people in the company, but they were busy and disorganized. So I quickly added value by coordinating meetings, by managing the conversation in meetings. I would even sometimes cut people off and say, you know what, we're not talking about that. We're trying to focus on this specific aspect of the plan. And even though I was 20 years the youngest person in the room, I kind of owned the space of meeting facilitation and organizing people around the objective. And so that was my spike, and that was how I was able to add value. And so the team could count on me for that. They knew that I was going to get them through rough moments. And it was an easy way for me to differentiate myself from this group of people that was just far, far, far more qualified to be in that room than I was. So the value of the spike is that it gives you something to build. It gives you something to work with, but it also gives you something really clear to contribute, even when you're the youngest person in the room.
So let's say someone's just graduated from college and they're on day one in their first ever full-time real job. Is there a way for them to easily identify what their spike is? What if they're just not sure because they haven't really had that much experience?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I think the first thing I'm going to say is that your spike, first of all, you'll have multiple spikes throughout your career, and your spikes will change as you move from job to job and environment to environment. So the notion of identifying your spike is not a one and done kind of phenomenon. Okay. You do kind of want to be building out a few as you go through your career. But in your first job, if you want to find a place to, you want to find something to hold on to, hopefully you've had some work experience before, whether it's an internship or, you know, even helping out around a family business or helping a neighbor, helping a family member with something they were working on, anything you've done in your clubs, any kind of leadership. Anytime you're putting yourself out there in an environment where there are other humans and you're making things happen, you're developing spikes, you're developing your skills. So if even if it's your very first job, even if it's your very first official work experience, think back to, you know, what role did you play on your high school volleyball team? What role did you play in the student club where you helped organize events? Just think back to places where you were helping make things happen with other people and ask yourself, what was I doing that I liked and what was I doing that I think I did pretty well? And it can be anything. I mean, it could be writing skills. You know, I talked about Excel. It could be presentation skills. It could be, you know, mathematical skills. It could be coding. It could be like something very, a very hard skill, but it could also be something less tangible, like organizing meetings or, you know, inspiring people in difficult moments. It can be something a little bit intangible, but find the thing, find the one or it could be two also. It doesn't have to be one. It can be easier to start with one, but one or two things that you can see there's a bit of a trend, and then work with that and then build it out. Don't assume that you're already the best at it. Work to, you know, like I said, find online courses, get some mentorship in that area, read more about it, post articles about it on your social media and read them, and just really work to kind of own that little space and make it something small so that in 30 days or the 90 days of an internship or the first 6 months on a job, you could really become known in your company as the person to go to when you have that kind of a demand.
That's great. Really great tip.
Yeah, thank you. I borrowed that word spike from BCG. There's all kinds of really great really great words that BCG uses for learning because it's such a part of the culture. So I borrowed that term from my BCG days.
Found myself thinking about a rhinoceros the whole time.
A rhinoceros, a spike. Yeah, you could kind of think of it as like something that's sticking out of your nose that's very prominent and notable. That's a really good visual. What's your rhinoceros nose? Maybe we should change the tip to that instead of what's your spike. What's your rhinoceros horn? Your rhinoceros nose.
Or your unicorn horn.
Unicorn horn. Yeah. We like unicorns at Career Protocol. We try to hide them in all of our materials somewhere. Cool.
Great.
Any other questions for me?
I don't think so.
Okay. I want to tell you a little bit more about Career Protocol. I started the company because we live in a world of paradoxes. On the one hand, you need to stand out and be special in this crowded, competitive world. On the other hand, you have to be a team player and work well with others. Collaboration is about doing both, being unique, amazing you, while finding common ground with everyone else. Career Protocol is about what makes us human, what unites us, and what makes each of us individual and unique. We've got loads of free content, courses to help you fulfill your potential in your career, and bespoke career consulting to help you navigate the challenges of making a difference. Come see us at careerprotocol.com/vote and become an insider. Your career will thank you for it. Okay, Beth. So my tip was all about being a unicorn. What you got? What's your tip today?
So my tip is about mastering the art of open and reciprocal communication.
Ooh.
And I think, as we know well here at Career Protocol, solid and effective communication is the fundamental backbone of all effective collaboration.
Absolutely.
And success in anything. And I think I really identified with your story about, in the last episode, locking yourself in your room and trying to solve problems. I'm also an introvert, and also just as an only child, I think I grew up just like entertaining myself and creating worlds on my own and then making things happen on my own. So it was like a little bit of an adjustment to go into the workforce and realize that you're always on a team. Even when you're given an assignment to work on independently, you are always on a team because your company is a team and it's nothing's in a vacuum. So basically success is contributing to the organization, which is a group of individuals, so contributing to other people.
You know, it's so interesting. As you're talking, I'm realizing, like, how we don't really learn this in school, you know?
No, it's that was, for me, that was the biggest adjustment from college to work.
Yeah, because everything up until the end of college is pretty much about being awesome all by yourself. No cheating, no copying, no collaborating on the test results.
Right.
It's all about you and yourself, and that is such a... Oh, it's because it's so the opposite of the real world.
Think about your opinion of group projects in high school and college.
Oh, yeah. The worst.
Hated them.
The worst.
Because it's just a way, it just like takes away the limelight from you as the superstar scholar. And you're probably like people on the team are slacking off. No one can figure out how to work together. You're never really taught the skills of how to work effectively in a team in high school or college. So you just kind of get through the few and far between group projects. But really, school is just about being awesome and writing an awesome paper. And I mean, building relationships with your professors is helpful, but I personally didn't really do that well because I was always writing my papers like midnight, a couple days before it's due. Yeah. And at that point, it's a little too late to ask the professor for help. So I think it's just a little bit of a mental shift. And if you can master that mental shift early on in your career before you start, it can really help you get into the groove faster and ease that transition into working. So going back to my tip, I think one of the biggest failings that I've watched people make in a new role, and including myself in this group, is just not communicating effectively and openly. So it has a couple of different permutations. I mean, first of all, you want to be open about what you're working on. So you need to over-communicate on certain things. It might feel like over-communicating if you are used to working alone or coming from a school environment. Giving status updates and learning how to give a status update that's both effective and efficient. You don't need to write three paragraphs about what you've been working on. You just need to give a message that gives the critical information that the other person needs to receive. It could be your supervisor, your peers, whoever you're collaborating with, whoever needs to know what your status is on a project. If you made a mistake also, just communicate that as well without dwelling on it or making it about you. Be open. Maybe you're not even sure if it's a mistake and you might not even be sure how what's at stake or how much of a big deal the mistake may or may not be if you're in the first, you know, a couple months of a new role. So just communicate what happened, find out if it's a big deal or not, and then move on. And it comes a little bit back to what we talked about in the last episode of how to communicate without being needy. So just mastering that art of being open. Don't hold everything inside, but don't drain people's time. Think about communicating in terms of how to save time for your coworkers and not drain time.
Very good. Now, how do you think about, you know, let's say you have a boss who's really, really busy and there's no expectation that you're going to give her any updates. How do you make time for that? How do you make that happen? How do you proactively keep someone posted when they're not necessarily looking for that information?
I think that would be a good thing to discuss and communicate about at the outset. So the second that your project is assigned to you, then there's the conversation about what it is, what you're supposed to do. And some point in that conversation, I would say, I'd like to communicate with you about this project in the way that's most, that's best for you. How can I do that? Would you like me to send you an email at the end of the day? Here's where I'm at. Or maybe twice a week. What's the frequency of communication that works best for you? And how can I, you know, get your attention if I need it, only in the instances where I really need it? And kind of set that expectation and plan at the outset.
Makes
so you,
sense.
Then that way going forward, you don't have anxiety about, for me, I've had a lot of anxiety about communication.
Because
it's like, that's what blocked me in the past from communicating effectively. If I wasn't sure how the supervisor was going to receive the communication, or I was afraid that they either would be bothered by it, or they would say, oh, you're doing this totally wrong. Even though I felt like doing it my way, I could still arrive at the goal that was mutually beneficial to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if I had just set that expectation at the beginning, it would have been so much easier to just, because then you're just following the path.
Right. Then you're just doing what you already agreed to.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's really helpful. Could you compose for us like a really model status update? Because I'm thinking, as you're listening, I'm trying to use this advice on myself. I feel like there's maybe like, really just two points in a status update.
Yeah.
Here's what I've done. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm doing next.
And maybe here's when I expect to complete what I'm doing next.
Makes sense. Yeah. Timing update. Timing update.
Especially if there's a firm deadline in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I think one thing that the supervisor, if they're just managing you,
mm-hmm.
I guess, because it could be if it's a team member where you're both working parallel on different aspects of a project versus just a supervisor who's like, get this done and get it to me by X date.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you just, with the supervisor, you just want to keep them reassured that you're on track, you're on target. So either say, I'm on track to get this to you by Monday morning, or I'm on track to have the next step completed by tomorrow and then get you the final by Monday morning.
Great.
Something like that. If it's a team member and it's a little bit trickier if you're both working on projects at the same time, so you would just give them an update about when you plan to finish your piece. And if the two of you need to convene, I'll be all set to have this ready for our meeting on Tuesday when we talk about next steps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your best collaborative experience, like the team or the work experience when you look back on and you think, oh, man, that was awesome. We just had so much fun and we got so much done and it was so awesome.
I think when I was a year ago planning the fundraiser at my old organization, which was a nonprofit and held a really big fancy schmancy annual gala every spring. I was in charge of a lot of different teams of volunteers since we had a small staff, as well as the staff. We all worked together to prepare different things for that event. And I think one team experience was working on the silent auction. That was just like a really fun team experience for me. We had a really clear system identified at the outset for how the team members were going to communicate and give each other status updates.
Mm-hmm.
We had a shared Google spreadsheet. Everyone had assignments. They were defined over time. We articulated our goals for where we wanted to be at certain points relative to the ultimate deadline, which was the event. And then we had predefined earlier deadlines, such as when we needed to receive the donation forms by, when we needed to receive the items by, and how we basically had a list of 200 to 300 companies that we contacted, and we divided those up among the volunteers. And I was responsible for keeping in touch with all the volunteers and getting them to give me their status updates. And certain people were better at that than others. What about you? Do you have a collaboration experience?
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, you made me remember several different experiences from my work life. I think the KPMG project of crafting the strategy was a good one, because we worked together intensely and we created an output that we were all really proud of, and that was really rewarding. But there are lots of others for my career. But if I think back, you know, when I was like, what's my favorite collaboration experience? I actually think back to when I was in business school and I was producing the Folly Show, which is like a talent show. It's like a variety show. And we made it our goal to have as many people as possible be in the show. I think the cast ended up being something like 60 people. And the show ended up being about 2.5 hours with something like 16 different numbers in it. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the 5 co-producers. And the challenge for me, the collaboration challenge for me in that show was relinquishing control. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not something that I think you necessarily struggle with in the first 30 days of a new job, because you don't have any control. You're the new person. You don't have anything that you own. But it is something that we all have to reckon with at some point, which is that I've done this before. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing more than most of the other people here. And I've had and I have a position where I'm expected to deliver. Like, it's on my shoulders if it falls apart. So how can I do my part, but also really get everyone else to do their part and not, you know, steamroll everyone or not be, you know, the boss, the bossy kid on the playground, which, you know, I was when I was when I was a little kid. So it's a different kind of challenge than the one that we're talking about today, but it's meaningful, because the end result, the reason why this stands out to me as my favorite collaboration experience, is because that show that night, like, it was sold out. There were no seats in the house. You know, we got 3 standing ovations, and everyone who was there said that it was the best one that they had ever seen of that show. And creating a live performance, there's nothing really quite like it. I'm kind of getting energized now even talking about it, because it's a live event. It all comes out in that moment, and it's like, fail or succeed, it's all going down on that night. And so, but my experience at the end was that we could all completely share the success. Like, everyone who moved a prop, who wrote a show, who sang a number, it belonged to everyone. And it was so much bigger than any one of us. And to me, that's the promise of collaboration, is that you can really create and build and impact things that are so, so much bigger than you. And the way to make that happen is to both do your part, communicate effectively, I'm integrating our tips now, and then to elicit and appreciate and celebrate the contributions of others. And, you know, a tip for how to do that effectively is maybe the subject of a different episode sometime long from now. But I think that's really the upside of getting collaboration right, is that there's nothing in life that feels quite like it, that feels quite like achieving something with others that you know you never could have done on your own. Cool. So with that in mind, let's recap. So my tip was, identify your spike, or in other words, find your unicorn horn, which Beth gets a little credit for that, because that was her idea. So I have a feeling I'm going to lose today again. All right. identify your unicorn spike. The place where you shine and sparkle. Like a unicorn. God, why didn't I think of that before? See, collaboration. You come up with better things than when you lock yourself away in your room, when you talk to other people.
Case in point right here.
So identify your unicorn horn and where you sparkle. And then make the most of it. Learn more, get good at it, and get other people to count on you for that. And that's kind of that'll be your cornerstone of the collaboration edifice.
All right. And my tip was, master the art of open and reciprocal communication. Be strategic and effective. Give status updates without being needy or draining other people's time.
Fantastic. So Just like last time, to vote, go to careerprotocol.com/vote and pick me?
No, pick me.
Or Beth. Okay.
And if you want to let us know who you voted for, you can always tweet us. We're at Career Protocol. And share which of us you think is the best. We're going to be obsessively refreshing our Twitter feed.
Yes, we are.
As soon as this goes live.
Be sure to include the hashtag, #first30.
Yep. FIRST30.
Forward to hearing from you. And next week, we're going to talk about relationships. It's been a theme that's actually kind of been present a little bit in all of both of the episodes so far. And that's because relationships are not only part of what makes work awesome, but they're essential to our very existence. So we'll talk about how to navigate and make the most of new relationships in your first 30. Mm-hmm. Next time, don't miss it.
See you then.